KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, you realize when you see the Gracie Films logo in the theater, there's been a while since you've seen the Gracie Films logo in the theater. We used to see it on The Simpsons or any number of things. But James O. Brooks is back as a producer. He should be writing and directing another film, but last time he was here for Spanglish. He's here for now for the film he produced, Edge of 17. First of all, Jim, so good to have you back.
Thanks.
And it is great to see that logo up on the big screen.
One of the kicks I've had is there's a little rustle because it's such a retro logo, first of all. All these amazing brand new logos smash on the screen with sound effects, and then our tinkly thing comes on, and there's a little stir over it.
Am I watching a TV show? What the heck is going on here? But let's talk about the film, Edge of 17, and tell us a little about the writer-director you found for this.
Remarkable. Kelly Fremont Craig. There was a four-year journey between first draft and the film you're seeing now, and it was sort of great because, I mean, from my end, it was trying to find a great spirit to work in, to hey, kids, let's do the show right here, which I missed a lot. And, you know, you stagger into people and everybody has a horror story these days of some sort or another. And this was fresh air. And it was in everything that's every which way about it. It was a passionate project.
Well, we're following a young woman played by Hailee Steinfeld, who's terrific in the film, by the way. And it's got that thing that you actually talked about the last time you were here, but something I've talked with you about since I've known you, which is the idea that there aren't villains in the world. I mean, there are people who seem like they're bad because they're following their own self-interest, but they're not evil people. And that's really what this film is about. And I found myself in a weird way as I was watching it. I was reminded of Starting Over.
You're the only one in the world who would make that statement. I just think, you know, when they call it a coming of age story, what isn't? I mean, it's a plot of everything.
Well, I wasn't about to do that just because I figured I want to be the 90th person today.
But it's that moment when your life is at stake, when you perceive your life is at stake, and unless something happens, you're sunk. The thing that's interesting about the age, which is Hailee Steinfeld and the character is 17 years old, is that there's no evidence to the contrary when you're that age.
Also, too, is that point, and I know there have been some points of comparison made to John Hughes. What I think it does have in common with the films of John Hughes is that at that age, everything feels like the end of the world. Every moment, every gesture.
Wait, I think everything feels like that right now, despite the age, doesn't it? It's hard to ignore that.
I'm too numb to experience to think that. But I think that's one of the things that really works in that it's overwrought at some points where, because there's so much expectation, that thing you're talking about, that you're still as a teenager, you think you know the world, but everything is still new to you. And so that idea of having everything kind of thwarted expectation for you becomes both the comedy and the drama of the situation, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is a real character. Every roadblock to generic was, you know, taken. I mean, we just wanted to serve these characters. Kelly wrote an amazing character based on a great deal of research. A great deal. And it's not just research. She's remarkable at talking to young people. The questions are extraordinary. I mean, you know, Kelly herself is a real deal, and I think this picture introduces her as a writer-director, which is terrific. And the character goes to the edge. The character, there's no wink at the camera. There's no assurances things are going to turn out okay. We're with the kid where things might not turn out okay. And at times you feel her go past the audience where they're starting to turn on her, which is true in the film as well. And then somehow, meanwhile, we're clocking laughs, which is what makes it special, I think.
I think so, too. But again, that for me, that thing that so much is about a philosophical point of view, a purview, if you will, for the way you work as a writer. And I think the kind of sensibility you're attracted to is that thing where people are feeling things so deeply they can't really tell who's good or bad or the kind of impact they're having on the world.
Yes.
Okay. And we're out of time. My guest was James Earl Brooks. I'm going to do some shadow puppets here on the air because we haven't had those here for a while. But that, I mean, that goes to your TV work. I mean, it, and sometimes it's the protagonist, but sometimes it's the characters that surround the protagonist. But there tend to be these kinds of people who don't really know. I mean, we could say just from the last time you're here, the Taya Leone character in Spanglish, or certainly I think we could say Nadine, the character that Haley plays here, is somebody who doesn't quite know. And
then the suggestion of the outside world, I think, is true in all of it as well. I mean, suddenly there it is. The bubble I'm in has just been punctured in some way that's irritating everything in my life. Yeah, I think that's true.
And I also think, too, that at some point the perspective of the story changes because we're seeing it from very close, from the protagonist's point of view. And suddenly we sort of pull back a little bit and we kind of see that these people often kind of like wreak havoc. And I found myself thinking in watching Nadine of the Jill Clayburgh character in Starting Over, but also the Candace Bergen character. I mean, the relationship she has with her mom, played by Kira Sedgwick, is really interesting in that way because each one of them thinks the worst of the other.
I do think, you know, I hope in that case a little bit, in this case a lot, I think this is an original character. I think that's what's so special. And the actress to play it coming along, which is a miracle, because we worked for 4 years. Over 1,000 young women were read for the part. That's a real number. I know it seems strange, but that's a real number. And if Haley hadn't come through the door, we wouldn't have made the picture.
It really came down to that. You had to find the right
young
woman.
You couldn't
forward.
Do it. You know, and that happens every once in a while. That there's. It's not a choice. It's not, gee, what do you think? It's oh, my God, we don't have a movie yet. And then somebody walks through the door.
How do you reconcile it, though, in working with a first-time director who probably in some way is itching to make the movie and sort of feels that?
She felt the same way. She felt the same way. And we've talked about it recently, and that was true. You know, I believe we've caught several breaks. If Woody Harrelson, who's a friend, hadn't been traveling through town at that precise moment, we wouldn't have had a movie. And the guy who plays her forlorn Asian friend, he was so damn special. The movie wouldn't be the movie, and he had never done anything before. And suddenly he was in front of us, and that was where we read two people. He was the second person in, and casting was over.
But he has such great timing.
I'm telling you, Elvis, it's. I'm not going to listen to this because I'm going to hate how I hear right now, what I sound like right now. But the turn on of seeing people just flower in this was, especially in retrospect, because, you know, when you're doing it, it's killing whatever the problem of the day is. But in retrospect, that it's I treasure it.
It's a treatment. I hope you're still listening to my guest, James Earl Brooks, who's producer of the
What's the matter? Idealism?
Yeah. Why don't you scare more people away, Jim? We're talking about his new film as producer, Edge of 17. And I found myself thinking, too, you talking about original ways to deal with young people, going back now, golly, over 20 years to Say Anything, which is another thing where you immerse us in this world. And it seems like it's one way at the start. And by the end of the first half, we realize it's by no means what we think it is.
Yeah, and strangely, Kelly, one of her favorite films and inspiring films is Say Anything, is Cameron's first film.
I can see that being the case because there is an archetypal, especially now, and even in the days of Say Anything, there was an archetypal teen experience film. And John Hughes has sort of made his own world, but by that point he had kind of a factory going and we knew what to expect from those films, so there was no surprise left to be rung in them. But the idea of, I mean, that must have been kind of a daunting prospect too because there are almost expectations that these movies manufacture in themselves, aren't there?
Yeah, and you know, we still we didn't talk teen film. That was not our rhetoric. That was not our conversation. It was about kids, but everything we did was just trying to make a good movie about human beings. And Woody is extraordinary. How do you do the teacher that a kid relates to and not be generic? You hire Woody Harrelson, and you have Kelly who wrote the lines, But I've never seen anybody sort of act, you know, because all their scenes are together. They're one-on-one scenes. They're one of the high points of the film, I mean, among the high points of the film. And he registers delight and distaste for her simultaneously. And that's the closest I can come because it's absolutely original. And I think he, you know.
And an original character, too, who, again, thwarts expectation. And let's not say anything more about it than that. But
yeah.
Clearly a thing that you responded to in the script initially. And I'm wondering how you found
it. Not the script initially. The process of what became the second draft and the emerging of Kelly as somebody with a real singular voice.
Was it not there in the first draft at all, or not as much?
Kelly tells me there's not a line in the first draft and the second draft. I haven't looked. But it was her. She impacted me. She seemed, you know, there's something about her.
What was it that you responded to in that first draft that is no longer extant in any iteration?
I don't remember the first draft at all. We went to work. And I've never been in a situation, you know, usually when, you know, I'm involved now in another draft or something I'm doing. But usually it's like, you know, this area isn't working and Act Two has. This was just why we here, what are we trying to achieve? Neither she nor I, miraculously, because she has every right to bring it up. Hey, I wrote this thing here. Ever referred to the first draft once we started working. It was sort of weird.
I find that fascinating because it sounds like you're talking about a little bit is an actor's process, which is finding the most honest way to make this make sense to you and not thinking about.
And we did, you know, because nobody was watching at a certain point. We did, you know, like I was mentioning Larry Moss, who's one of the great acting teachers in the world. We went and sat in the back of his class. Rick Carter, who's one of the great production designers. We'd just have lunch with him and talk. We didn't have to fit into a mold in what the process was for this film. So we just would hang out.
And part of this, too, is that it's also an independent production for you. And then did that give you a little more room than you would normally have had?
Well, it was interesting asking for money. the process of trying to get money for a small film is really it was interesting, and you know it leads you to odd places, to places in town you've never been before, because collections of people who have only in common that they have money to spend, and finally a new studio had started, and their business model was based on building the middle ground with pictures, as the other studios gave up the middle ground.
What do you mean by the middle ground for those who might not know?
$40 million and 40 to 60, 30 to whatever it is. Somewhere in there, it's an amount of money. And we are a low-budget film, you know. But they just supported us. And they did do it. And they were new, and it was loose. And that support sort of was unending, which is interesting, too.
Did you know that she had it in her to direct just based on your first conversations with her?
You know— And we had this conversation in retrospect. It's like your questions about the draft. She remembers, and I have no memories. She remembers that one day I said to her, you know, you should direct this. And she remembers it because she had been trying to figure out how she could suggest the preposterous notion that she direct it and how she defend it and how she make her case. And that's the way it happened.
By inadvertence, because I guess from the way you work.
Well, I believe in writer-directors a lot.
Of course you do. But by the way you work, the way you're constantly asking questions, I know some of your conversations are about questions, because you're asking a question not knowing – you're asking a question with not having the answer in mind already. You want to actually get an answer from somebody rather than have it be a kind of received wisdom that they're just ready to spout off to you. And that feels like the way you work as a producer, is that you're asking these questions because you – honestly want to know what the answer is rather than telling somebody an answer.
Yeah. I what I always think about a film, and it's very much true in the film that Kelly made, that, you know, the great thing that happens when there's no boss, when the picture becomes the boss, when instead of looking at each other and having whether they're confrontations or consultations, whatever you want to call them, you just look up and point to the heavens and that wants you to do something, where you're all serving something that's a little amorphous and it's not about, you know. And I think for everybody, the actor, I think everybody.
Because what you're talking about is something that seems to be certainly anathema to the process nowadays of movies getting made, is having the movie find itself rather than forcing a movie into a schedule.
Well, you always have to have a schedule. In our case,
but you know what I mean? Like you basically a schedule to get the movie made. Because you said this is a 4-year gestation process.
Yeah, but it's always been a long time for me, for everything. I mean, it has. It just as always has been. And it's funny because I get my, you know, because television, it's all quick. And it's one of the excitements about working in television.
I mean, it's quick because almost take you back to your background in journalism, where basically you have a hole to fill in TV, and once you get this thing going, you got to keep that machine going.
Yeah.
And movies allow you a little bit of distance and perspective. But again, taking that kind of time to work on a project and have it find itself is becoming more and more of a rare circumstance.
Well, I always think that, you know, you could always decry what's going on now, the fact that the business has finally become a business and it's real and you can project earnings on a picture and you can be accurate a lot of the times. But there's always somebody working someplace where the heart beats through and it's going to happen. And I was glad to be around when it happened for Kelly.
A hint of optimism in the first half of him. I guess it's James O. Brooks, his producer. His new film is Edge of 17. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's The Treatment. Our old friend James O. Brooks is here as a producer. His new film is Edge of 17. And that idea for me that it's got to be about the right group of people, and this young woman, this young actress, Hailee Steinfeld, who just, I was telling you before, one of the interesting things about her is her voice seems to be about 10 years older than she is. So when she's talking about things, if you just listen to her, they kind of sound well-reasoned almost, or at least thoughtful from that character. Until you see that face, you realize she doesn't have any experience. So she's projecting a world that doesn't exist yet.
You mean the character or Hailee?
The character.
Yes.
And I wonder if in hearing Hailee, in the process of finding her, what made you think that she was the right person for it?
It's not casting up a character. It's not finding a kid who's like your kid or the kid in the movie. She's a fantastic actress. I think the most amazing thing is that she's character acting.
She is. But that's something I would say that really applies to you in almost every way. You want people to work as character actors.
Well, that's the act as opposed to the act. I mean, that's the theory of the damn thing, isn't it?
I'm asking you. You don't get to ask me this. I'm asking you. But I mean, but that's the thing that you think about the things that you love, and we've talked about so many of these movies that mean things to us, and they're all movies. So I think about them. We've talked about Network any number of times, and that was certainly a movie that's full of character actors. There's not any conventional movie star in it. The one, William Holden, is basically past his prime, but we end up reacting to that because he brings that into the film. And this idea for me, too, in your movies of experience, the way people experience the world and the way they talk about it, they don't quite seem to realize that what they're talking about in themselves is not what other people see in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Kelly has brought to this too, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, it's a writer's cliche, the characters were talking to me, you know. I mean, it sort of touches on what that phenomenon touches on what you say, you know. And when she brought in that second draft, it was a Bible. It was great. And then all of us, including Kelly, had to serve it.
But again, I just feel like some part of you, when you get that thing, you're kind of itching to make it. You hunger to want to make this thing because it feels so fully realized on a page versus the reality of finding the right people. That's got to be kind of an interesting war.
The glorious thing about it is I never understood auteur. I never understood it. It is so thoroughly a team sport. It is so much a team sport where the bench player can kill you and kill the whole deal if something goes wrong. I mean, that's why I like that about it. It's like I say, hey, kids, let's do the film right here.
Well, what was it like being with her on her first day of shooting with Kelly as she's on the set for the first time?
The first day I shot, you know, and directed, where my first AD took me on a walk, and I'd been in television, you know, and took me on a walk and said, you say cut, and and just went through the process for me, and then you know, we I tell you it's okay, then you say action, and I'm always grateful that he took me on that little walk because I was aware of not quite knowing what I was going to do first step, and took me on that little walk. I mean.
Did you do the same thing with her? Did you give her that kind
no,
of counsel?
No, I think she knew that. She does enormous homework. And by the way, you got to remember, with a writer director, they've seen a picture. They've seen the picture in their heads, but then the trick is not to make that picture, because now everybody else comes into it and you cast it and you can't make that one that's in your head, because it has to be about the living, breathing humans in front of you. And that can be the danger for a writer-director as well, that, you know, the script, but, you know. And I think the script – I always think this – you know, when I – the first picture I wrote, another person directed it, and a great director, and I was barred from the set after day one. And
you were barred from starting over?
I was barred from starting over, but later included in post-production to an extraordinary degree and mentored by Alan Pakula, who was a brilliant director, because he said this great thing to me. When you direct, you don't have to – I don't know that I agree with it, but it was a great thing. When you direct, you don't have to know everything, but you need the illusion that you do. And I'm making faces at the actors, and I'm smiting my head when I think it's going wrong, and they can see me. Man, I'm lucky they didn't have me locked up rather than just banned from the set.
My guest who is directing even now is James O. Brooks. His new film as producer is Edge of 17. It's the Tree. That's interesting, because was that your experience on television as well when you were
– No, television, the writer, executive producer is the authority figure, and yeah. You know, and you do it, but you know, and the things I've worked on, there's writing rooms and then you all go down and I'll tell you a story off that. You know, Steve Gordon?
Sure.
Steve Gordon died at a very young age after having done one film, Arthur. And I was with him on the first television thing he did. And he's a rookie writer at the long edge.
Was that the Ted Bessel show?
I don't even remember. No, I don't know what show it was.
Okay.
You're the only one who knows television like that, man. I remember when you were a critic for the New York Times and you knew television, and I couldn't believe it. But anyway, he's sitting at the end of that long row of chairs, where he's quiet and he gets to sit on the set. He gets to see a set for the first time. He gets to look at actors doing his stuff for the first time. And we begin. And then usually when we come back, I encourage people to talk in the writer's room. How do you feel about it, what we just saw? And instead he says, they're standing in the wrong places. And I said, where should they be standing? And he moved them a little, and it was funny. And then it was funny. And that's Steve on the first moment that he was on a stage. So I think it's emblematic in a way.
Was it that kind of affinity for you as well? I mean, the first time you on the film set? Because it's a different a space than television is.
I was lucky to have been on so many television sets where, you know, because I always think the hardest transition somebody has to make is when you're standing behind somebody who's directing a movie and they say, you know what he should do, you know what she should do now, you know what I do. And then suddenly you say, do this, and it's a very hard transition. It's a very strange thing to suddenly be there. But for television, when you've had that experience of saying that in television, it's very helpful when you walk on a stage, because more like television treats writers well, and television treats writers enormously well. Movies, at a certain point, a little less so now, treat directors great.
Yeah, I mean, some directors didn't treat their writers so well based on starting over. But anyway, what?
No, I had it coming.
But I've got to ask you, too, because having had that experience, and as a producer, you've got to know enough to give the writer-director room, because they've got to find this thing on their own. But still, there are things that you can help them with that they
you
might
can't
not be.
You can't be too self-conscious about that stuff, too. Yes, as a decent human being, you have to have in mind an empathy for their experience. But the movie's the boss, you know, like you know. It's and you have a day that you have to do whatever has to be done that day. That's the way it's going to be done. So there's that pressure. There's no time for that kind of grace that you're describing. And we had some. We fought very hard for three in front of the number of days we had to shoot, 30. And if we had had 27, it would be a different movie. And what do you do? What do you do about that one when they give you 25 or 24, which is what happens a lot?
I've had any number of people come in here and tell me, had 23 and 24.
And then the one thing I always want to resist in my life, to be the guy in the bar telling that story, you know what we could have done if I only had having sat in the bar and been that guy a couple of times, you know.
But one of the other advantages you've had, too, in getting to do TV for so long before you directed a film and before you produced your first film as a writer, is you got a chance to watch actors work and really see what is
there. Yes, and learn. And Mary Tyler Moore Show was my college, and all the actors on that show had come from different disciplines.
And they were all veterans. They all been doing it for a long time.
And talk about asking questions. I mean.
So what do you got a first-time director. Because I think we're going to want to hear about the idea of encouraging without forcing your hand.
I had done it twice before.
Yeah.
And each time is different depending on the individual. But
the first time you did it with a first-time director. Cameron was a first-time director.
Yeah, and so was Wes Anderson. When I did it with Penny Marshall, she was a second-time director. But the first time where it's really her imprimatur. You know, she had done a genre picture before that. And it becomes a strange, intimate relationship, but not the same intimate relationship each time. I mean, you know, and I think this thing happens where what you have in common and the thing that creates the intimacy is you're raising that child together. I mean, I think that's what happens. And that can be as different as that is in life.
Because I guess what I wanted to, in a case like this, because this in a lot of ways is a very delicate movie. I mean, it really feels like that it's the achieving the kind of balance that the movie has, because it feels to me incredibly balanced with that thing I was talking about. Well, we don't know what's happening from scene to scene, and we don't know who really. You realize about a third of the way in that we don't know who anybody is, and that's the best kind of mystery to have, because that really creates tension. Is that what's going to happen next? Tension. And the idea of encouraging that kind of delicacy seems like an extraordinary thing to do, because you've got somebody who's got this enormous machine.
But the delicacy in some macabre way comes out of, you know, pounding things with a blunt instrument.
Really?
I mean, like Kelly knew from day one that jacket had to be right. I mean, you know, the insanity over details she had going in. And that's what you have to have. I mean, you have to go legally insane to direct a picture. You do, because, you know, you have this warped thing that's the only thing taking place in the world and stuff like that. I always think that's what you have to do, because, because the wrong is that jacket is wrong.
And by the way, she's right. That jacket tells us exactly who Nadine is.
Yeah, and people pick up on everything, and everybody sees everything. Everybody's seeing everything all the time. And you know, I think maybe there are 3 or 4 or 5 days, you know, that tested Kelly and tested everybody that happened in the shooting. But I think she's a natural. I think she proved to be a natural. And she proved to be a natural through a work ethic. But the work ethic, and she broke through, and now she's a natural. Because I can't explain it any other way. But it was great to see.
It's interesting, because I also think, too, it's a film that really feels like it's informed by a female perspective.
Yes, yes, and, very much so.
And allowing that to flower without trying to sort of say, no, you've got to do this and this and this. I mean, I know I'm asking these questions, but you're saying there are no hard and fast rules, are there? Or are there?
Commitment is a hard and fast rule, I think.
Okay.
I mean, if you're not committed, and if the people around you aren't committed, because if you're directing or doing anything, and you're there talking about a pair of shoes for, you know, when everybody, you know, for a long time, what those shoes should be, and somebody rolls their eyes, your balloon is busted. You know, you're made to feel foolish, self-conscious, being the arch enemy of creativity. And here, all the people were committed, you know, and it's. Like I say, hey, kids, all the people were committed.
But how did the script get to you? How did you end up meeting with her in the first
place? She wanted me to read it, and I read it, and, you know, and I was having a crummy day, and she came in, and, you know, it was, I don't know, it was kind of, you're mouthing words, and you're going, you know, your mind is on your own stuff. And as she was leaving, this is becoming such a moment, because I've talked about it before. She turned around and she said, "Nobody works harder than I do." And the way she said it, it was impactful, man. You got it. You know, and throughout whatever I was going through that day, it was, you know, gee whiz. And it was great. And then when we went around trying to raise money, what happened a few times, and it should be noted, because I hope I'm not right, and I probably am not right. But we went to at least 3 or 4 meetings where it was pro forma, because they loved the script so much. And we come in and Kelly is a very attractive girl who hasn't directed, and I was there to support in any way I could. And it didn't happen. And it did occur to me, even though I don't – I just believe Hollywood is about we want good material. We want to make a movie. That's what it's about. This other stuff is never true. But I started to think if she looked more like Wes Anderson than Kelly Fremont Craig, would they have said okay? I don't know.
Because it's always these other circumstances. I mean, people always do say that, but it ends up being an accretion of things that make these things happen, isn't it?
Perhaps unconsciously. You have to feel tremendous confidence. Perhaps unconsciously. Perhaps, you know, like all these things, like all these prejudices. You know, it's like maybe.
Because I got to think the thing that as you're going to raise money that people want to have to know is that thing you said that she said at the end of the meeting that she's got this – deep dish down in the bone belief that she can do this thing, and that kind of confidence carries a day in these meetings, doesn't it? Or does it?
She doesn't project like that. She's an Orange County girl, very good manners, you know. And you know, to see Will of Iron and first-rate mind takes more than a half-hour meeting.
So what was your response? Because I know the film just played at the Toronto Film Festival. What was it like to see it with an audience?
Well, here's the thing. We had great previews, and we still felt we didn't have it, and they let us go up for three more days.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that's very unusual. And so we felt very good about, you know, and Kelly had one thought for the last shot that turned out to be, I think, defining the movie to me. I mean, it just made me feel great. And there was some other stuff that we had to fill in. And Toronto is what everybody always says about it. I'd never been there before. The greatest audience there is, you know, a great theater. And Hayden, who breaks out in the movie, Hayden Zito, had never seen himself in anything, had never been in anything. And he's this sensation in the movie where in his first scene, he mouths some words. He says, Coolio, it's not even a complete sentence. And they are in love with him. I've never seen anything like it. Now, he goes in. He's never seen himself. And now I think they're like a 1,000-seat house, fall in love with him at that moment, and then laugh at everything he does. And then he comes out, and he sobbed. And that's what this, you know, so, I mean, that's what this experience has been like, you know? And it's the real deal, you know?
It is, and it's been too long since you've been here. Go make a movie or something.
So we'll talk right after this.
Okay, we'll talk right after this. So you don't get to hear it. But in the meantime, my guest is James L. Brooks. His new film, As Producer, is Edge of 17. Again, Jim, thanks so much for doing this.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, well then, that's almost like a vote of encouragement. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Leo DeLagno.
I'm worried about the election, man.
Yeah, so lots of things going on here. The show is mixed by Kat Yours, edited by Blake White, who's associate producer. I have no confidence left. It's The Treatment.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.